You guys have questions. We hopefully have answers. The advice is sort of not cut and paste. So if you do have a question and you're really unsure about something, you know, we'll put our best foot forward here. But if this is not enough, feel free to hit us up on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, wherever you want. Come to the building.
Come in and see.
Come and see us. So Maddie,
we have a question.
We have a question.
Yeah. So we have one on Twitter from Benny E, and he talks about this paradox of VCs.
Yep.
And how the ones that you ideally do want to help you along with your business and the ones that shut you down and they're not necessarily interested.
Yep.
So as an entrepreneur, how do you win at this?
Yeah. So I guess what he's getting at there is, you know, hey, I've got this idea. What do you think of my idea? And you go, oh, that's so cool. I love it. But actually, as much as I care about you and you care about me, I don't need, like, you're not the one that's going to help me.
Yes.
Maybe as a customer, you're going to be able to help me, but as an investor or helping me scale to the next, I think you need that investor. And that investor is not as enthused about you or your business.
Yes.
So here's where I think the rubber hits the road. I think it's all about traction. I think investors get really excited about mission and vision, but more excited about traction and action.
Like solid data.
Yeah. The market is the market is the market, and the market's going to tell you whether or not you've got a hero or a zero, or a zero or a hero. And so I think that in order for you to be able to grab that investor and pull that investor in and get them on the journey with you, I think the data has to speak.
Yeah.
And I think that those that have not had a tremendous amount of great experiences with venture capitalists, VCs, private offers, now, maybe those businesses aren't tracking the way they should, and maybe the venture side of, and I can't speak for everyone, but my assumption is that they don't want to be the bastards and go, that horrible idea, this is shit, get out of my face. Because you never know where things are going to take a turn and whether or not you're going to come back. So they always want to say, well, I'll speak for myself. If you came to me and said, this is my amazing idea, I'd be really excited for you. And then I'd say, all right, so what's the customer saying? And if your customer's not saying much, we got no customers, I'd be less enthused, but I'd be like, hey, come back to me once you can prove this little issue out you have here. Maybe it's not a little issue, but it's a massive issue. But prove it, and then let's get talking. So I think data related, and I think venture capitalists are in positions where they're not interested in hurting people, and they want to try and keep their options open. So therefore, they may or may not, and some of them may be a different tone, and I don't want to speak for all of you guys out there, but maybe his experiences was with the polite venture capitalists. Not to say that there's not polite venture capitalists, just chill everyone, sit down, relax. But maybe that polite person wasn't able to say, horrible idea, there's the door.
Yeah.
Or maybe that person was more optimistic, was like, prove this data point out, or prove this out, and come back to me, and I'll write you a check. So I think the market is the market is the market, and if you can seed something into the market and that's absorbed, you know, I think a lot of people will come write checks for you. But if you're not performing, or the product isn't yielding, or it's not scalable, or alternatively you don't have a founding team, or you don't have a technical officer, or you don't have the right ingredients, potentially you're a pass. And I'll be honest, like I wouldn't want to personally be a venture capitalist, because I don't want to invest in everything. I'd lose a lot of money. But I think that, you know, they've got to pick, there's only so much money that they've got, and they would rather write bigger checks, knowing that they're just pouring more money or more water on the seeds to help them grow. Versus trying to really like kickstart something together and fail and spend money, but like they don't want to burn money.
Yeah.
Right? Because they've got investors that are giving them, or family offices, or people that are giving them money. So I think that it's an interesting paradox that the only people you want conviction from are the venture capitalists, and 99% of the time they say no. And I think that 99% of the time they say no is because there's a few things that haven't been proven out. So Benny E, hit me on Twitter. I think we actually spoke on Twitter earlier this week. If there's more information that I can disclose to you or not, just reach out. All right, what's up next?
So, email from Jen.
Jen?
It's along similar lines, but of a different vein.
Yep.
She's currently bootstrapping.
Yep.
And she's wondering, at what point does she venture out and go and get extra help?
Yep.
Should she keep control? Should she seek some independent sources? How do you decide?
Yeah, so this is a massive conflict for me, because I grew up with very traditional family and married into Sim's family, and they're very traditional, and both of our parents are, hey, if you don't have the money, don't do it.
Mm.
Yet in today's world, and by the way, Petloo was built like that.
Yeah.
So Petloo was bootstrapped 10 years. Yeah. Next time Sim's in, maybe I'll have a vlog with her about how we used to eat cereal for dinner. Real stories, guys. And now this world is about where you've got co-working spaces and you've got venture capitalists and people that are, like, access to money is a lot easier. If you have the right product and service and business, you can really blow it up. So I'm going to answer in a very conflicted way. I think you should bootstrap for as long as you possibly can, because every day that you are bootstrapping, the more value you're creating for your business, the bigger the valuation, so that when it comes to the point in time where you have to, because you're just going too quickly, hopefully, you have to take external funding to grow and scale, the pie is a lot bigger, and so therefore the dilution is a lot smaller. That said, there's a fine line, like in anything. When there's too much or too little or something, it could almost spoil the whole pie. And so you don't want to hold out too long and starve yourself and sort of hinder growth or stunt your growth. And on the flip side, you don't want to go too quickly and then end up with like a small sliver of like this incredible business that you just kind of give it away.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I have a very "this is for you" Jen answer. I'd really like to understand more about where you're actually at, from seed to series A, or sort of like seed bridging to series A, like whatever you want to term it. But part of me says hold on and starve. And grow and grow and grow until you really like just hit a ceiling and you just can't go any further, and then go out. And by the way, you need a crystal ball for that as well, right? So you don't want to hit the ceiling and then go, I can't go any further, and now it's going to take you 6 months of trying to entertain venture capitalists or private money or money people, and you haven't increased sales in that 6 months time, and like you end up with a disaster story. So there's part of me that says that, and there's a part of me that says, hey, if you're really, really like going to get there, start having the conversations as early as possible and start to work out the framework and start to work out like, you know, your term sheets and all of that sort of stuff so that there's no disruption. And when you hit that ceiling, you can punch through it from a monetary and sort of performance base, because you have the funds to be able to grow. So curly one, maybe very generic in answering, maybe not. I'd love to know more detail. Hit me up on Twitter or LinkedIn, or just reach out, and maybe I can help you a little bit further. But you know, Petloo was born on starvation, and actually I can tell you honestly, we got to the point where we were at the size that because of that family value of, hey, if you don't have the money, don't go take the loans, don't take the don't spend what you don't have. I know, because Petloo is now like 10 times the size of what it was when I owned it. But I was happy, like, you know what I mean? Like we were happy to exit at that stage. So a bit of a conflict in terms of my answer, but hey, if you're growing, just keep growing and keep going.
And
eat the cereal for dinner. There's no shame. In fact, I've caught Sim a bunch of times.
Still eating it.
Like, what? You don't need to do that. What are you doing? She's like, you know, takes me back. Yeah, it takes me back. So I'm good with that. But just keep hustling, and I hope to God that things grow for you, strength to strength, and you have big problems or big growth problems, and not the other way around. Cool.
Cool.
Maddie?
Perfect. We have an email from John. I've seen many colourful investment conditions pitched to startups in order to accept funding. Without going into specifics, what are the key things you should look to see in an investment offer that makes it a genuine investment to help grow the business?
Phenomenal question. And I think that this is a question that has come up for us as Creative Cubes. It's come up as a value prop from a Creative Cubes, and it's sort of like a value pillar that we hold on to, and that is trust, right? There's a lot of people and there's a lot of companies out there that sort of prey, and there's a lot of money to be made on preying on people that really don't know, or they sort of like, they dangle the carrot of these amazing financial gains, i.e. funding for businesses, and the founder, instead of really sitting back and assessing the opportunity, because they are a founder, and by the way, money is oxygen to these businesses, they jump. So my advice is, so before I give you my advice, you know, here at Creative Cubes, we've set up a system and an operation that anyone that comes through our door, as much as they're interviewing us and checking out our space, we're also interviewing them. We want to know that they're trusted. We want to know what circles they run in. We want to know their history. We want to understand their business. We want to understand things that we, as a platform, as a community, can help them benefit from. And if we get any sort of like skew answers or things that we're not comfortable with, like in all transparency, you know, there's a chance that we may or may not offer an opportunity for that company or those individuals to come into Creative Cubes. And the reason why, coming back to answering your question, is anyone that's in this building, we want to know that they're a safe, trusted, reputable, honest, integral person or integral company, and that at the chance that you pass them when you're getting your stuff out of the locker, or you know, rub shoulders as you go in between meetings, or alternatively just grabbing some of that delicious sparkling water that we have on tap here. we want to know that if there's a opportunity to do business and a connection there, that both parties are trusted and honorable people. And when it comes back to an investor, the first thing that I personally look at, and I haven't raised a lot of external capital, but I look at like their portfolios, and I look at some of the companies that they're running with. I instantly check out what they're talking about on Twitter, on LinkedIn. Are they well known? I definitely go to their LinkedIn profile. I see who they're connected to. You know, 6 degrees of separation always, sometimes even smaller, especially, you know, if you use Melbourne, Australia as an example. You know, there's got to be some mutual connections. And I've got to tell you, that's happened like a gazillion times here at Creative Cubes. Oh, Gavin. Oh, you know, Ronan. You guys, everyone knows everyone.
It's a small world.
And so if there's some stuff that doesn't feel right, you just got to keep asking all those questions. But look for the portfolios, look for those people that you can leverage to ask questions of, if there is an existing relationship there. And also ask yourself, is the deal too good to be true? Because often, if it sounds too good, it potentially is too good. And you're going to pay for it somewhere along the line.
Truth or myth?
Yep.
It's always bad to turn down investors.
Wow, that's actually a good one. So I really believe it's circumstantial.
Mm-hmm.
If some businesses don't need as much money as people make out that they need, right? And I was even speaking with Andy, one of the founders here at Creative Cubes, about, not about Creative Cubes, but just about businesses in general feeling or acting bloated.
Mm-hmm.
They've got too much money, so their decision making isn't like dialed in. They're okay with, you know, a bit of a stuff up here, or a bit of a stuff up there. And I think that is the wrong approach.
Yeah.
I think that you should be scrappy as all hell for as long as you can. I used to live on this saying, and I really still do, stay as lean as possible for as long as possible. So in that regard, I don't think you should ever shut the door on anyone ever,
mm-hmm.
because you never know when it's going to come back to you.
Yeah.
Which also is sort of like along the lines of, you know, you should always do right by people, even though there's no short-term gain. Somewhere down the line, someone's going to walk in and recognize you or remember you or hear about you, i.e. Saturday night.
Yeah.
You're the girl on the vlog. I just don't think you should ever shut doors. I think you should always keep doors open. And so it might not be the right time to raise money in your business, or on the other side, it might be like you're desperately waiting or desperately trying to close deals. But I just don't think it's always a bad to turn down investors. I don't think it's bad or good.
Yeah.
I think at the right time, it could be a great decision or a bad decision. But sort of, you know, I love basketball. Always try to keep your dribble alive.
Yeah.
If you pick up the ball, you've got two options, pass or shoot. And if you're at the back end of the court, you can only pass the ball. So, is it always bad to turn down investors? I think that you really need to know your business at the right time on whether or not you should or you should not accept external funding. And I will say this, I think that it's super important that you have enough money to execute,
mm-hmm.
but not too much money.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I hope that answers your question.
On that,
I hope that validates truth or myth.
On that,
mm-hmm.
what if you were to get an investor show interest that is not right for your business? How do you determine a good and a bad investor?
That's a good point. I think that at all times you need to be partnering with the right investor.
Yeah.
Some people do silly things. I've seen it been done before, and I've been on the opposite end where I've come in to coach and mentor, and someone's taken a deal which I would never ever do.
Yeah.
And so you've got to make sure that the investors around you are the right ones for your business. Otherwise, you know, you're working for them.
Yeah.
And it's a deep relationship that's going to be there. And so if you have sort of like the smallest doubt, we actually here at Creative Cubes, like my partners and I, we execute with conviction. So if someone's on the fence in our team and they're like, I'm not sure, like that's not good enough to proceed.
Yeah.
We have to have total conviction as a team, as a group, in order to advance. And so if you're sort of like unsure about an investor or unsure about the character of that investor, I would personally not be doing the deal.
From Dean P, one of our community members.
Deanie.
Slack.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dean.
Thanks, Dean.
What are the factors that usually slow down the capital raise process?
It's a great question. I think that if you have a really average company or a really average product and something that's not really got a lot of traction, the process can be pretty slow. Pretty slow to the point where you're spending a lot of time, energy, and effort speaking to someone that really hasn't got the nuts or the balls to say, this isn't for me.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think that if you have strong traction and you have a good product, not necessarily a great product, but obviously great is better than good, the process should be pretty quick.
Okay.
It is a full-time gig. You know, we look at members downstairs, such as Danielle from Carista, like she spends a large majority of her time. I don't want to give it a weighted on a percentage level, but she spends a large majority of her time working with investors and speaking with investors and pulling this money. Yeah. She's doing exceptionally well, by the way. But she'll tell you openly that it's a full-time gig for her.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, she's a CEO. And by the way, they're coming out of beta. And by the way, there's a whole list of things. But from a cap raise, if you're really not getting the traction or the interest from investors, you should probably look at your product or your company. Is it investable? Is it scalable? Investors, there's a lot of investors out there, and a lot of different people look at a lot of different things. But investors really want to know these things can go 10x, 20x, 50x. In fact, I would say that some of them wouldn't even bother if it only went 10x.
Do you think you need to be at a certain stage, for example, prototyping, to be able to get a certain interest from investors? Or do you think they're pretty quick to see a gold nugget?
Yeah, so I think it's all about the traction. So if you take crowdfunding, for example, if you've got a prototype and you have some traction in market, and there's been this mass interest in, hey, I want to sign up and I want to invest from a crowdfunding, crowdsourcing perspective, that might be enough.
Okay.
It might be that you've built a prototype and you need some money to prove traction. I mean, there's varying levels, right? Are we talking about seed fund? Have we bootstrapped to get it to a certain level? Or are we talking about Series A, where you're looking at $3 to $5 million to be injected in because you've got the formula and now you just need to pour more money on it? So let's dial it back like half a beat and talk about rounds of investments.
Yeah.
So you have the seed, which pretty much comes out of the founders' pockets, right? And that's you as a founder, entrepreneur, startup, planting the seed, right? Series A is really about pouring more water on the seed. Okay. So I've worked out how to grow it. I know how to, nurture it. I know how to get it out of the ground. Now I just need more water. And Series A is about that more water.
Yep.
If at any stage you haven't really developed this seed and there's nothing really sprouting, you're either in the wrong patch of soil.
Yeah.
And I'm not a farmer, but you're in the wrong place doing the wrong thing with the wrong ingredients, right?
Okay.
Or alternatively, if you've got some very minor growth, then you might want to do like a bridge to Series A, which is just another status for, hey, I've run out of money, but I still need some money and I'm not quite at Series A status yet. So the nurturing of the plant is a very nice way to look at it from an investor standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But to get back to Dean's question, Dean's quite unique in as much as I think he's got a ripper product.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I think that once he's got his prototypes, and he's ready to go to capacity, like people should be throwing themselves at him.
Yep.
On the flip side, if his product wasn't as good, it might take him a year, not him specifically, but it might take a year to figure out that you actually have, you're betting a horse and the race is already over.
Okay.
And your horse hasn't even left. So I think if you've got the right product and you're doing the right things, investment should be pretty quick, sort of like 30 to 90 days.
Yeah.
If you're below that, you're going to find a lot of people that are disinterested in your product because of your performance. And you might get some dumb money, but...
What's dumb money?
Well, dumb money is people that have got money that think it's a cool idea, but really haven't ascertained whether or not there's a life in this business.
Yeah.
But they're like, yeah, cool, let's throw it at it. Oh, I'm an investor.
Yeah.
So you might get some dumb money, but you probably won't get strategic, and you definitely won't get growth from the right people. Hey guys, this is Toby from Creative Cubes. If you like the podcast, please give it a thumbs up or make some comments. Perhaps you'd like to share it. Thanks, guys.